What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking about the Tank Bowl. Series of games between Washington Wizards, New Orleans Pelicans, the two worst records in the NBA coming into the series. And it's a series where the loser of both games is, you know, in retrospect, the winner of both games when you factor everything in, you know, come the NBA draft lottery. Washington lost both games. So it seems like, you know, they're the real winner, especially coupled with a couple of Alex Starr terrific showings. Bob Carrington had a great game in the second game against New Orleans. You know, Washington loses both games, but in retrospect is the winner. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Tank Bowl. You had a nice win against Chicago three games ago, you know, where the Wizards really dominated the entire game, kind of what you saw in both contests against Charlotte. And so you come away from these last three games. You know, you have a really nice win to make it, I think, 3-4 in their last seven at that point. And then you lose two, I would say, must-lose games in this equation of this tank. And you're sitting pretty right now at 6-27, back to owning the worst record in the league. And you couple that with a couple other big results. And when we go to the tank standings, we'll talk about it. But Utah has been playing great basketball. They just won at Milwaukee. Or that wasn't them. That was Portland. Sorry. Portland just won at Milwaukee. Have had a couple good games to give them the 12 wins. Utah's on a two-game winning streak, just had a really good road win against the Magic. So you're starting to see these teams separate themselves, while the Wizards, you know, albeit winning a couple games these last couple weeks, are still so solidly in that bottom spot and kind of seeing some separation from some teams like Toronto and Utah and Portland to solidify them in that bottom spot. But first, the first thing on the agenda that I want to talk about today is a little different than the Wizards. It's not Wizards news. I know this is the Wizards podcast, and this is what you come here for. But at the end of the day, the Phoenix Suns are a pretty big part, or will be a pretty big part in this rebuild, considering that's what started it, is Bradley Beal asking out, the Suns swooping in with this package, the best one that probably the Wizards would get. He had the no-trade clause, so they were kind of handicapped, and somehow, some way, even with all that against them, you know, Will Dawkins, you know, Michael Winger, they were still able to get a haul. And albeit not the haul that you expected a couple years ago with, you know, four first-round picks, four pick swaps and young players and all that. But for what it was worth at the time, a disgruntled asset, $50 million a year, no trade clause, to get all the second-round picks and the pick swaps and the expiring salaries that eventually turn into Jordan Poole, who's been terrific this season, a possible all-star. All of that said, it was a terrific return. And nonetheless, just the fact that Bradley Beal was gone, you could start this rebuild, was enough for most Wizards fans. But on top of that, Washington's looking really good when you look at Phoenix and you consider them probably the biggest disappointment. I don't think that would be a stretch to say. The biggest disappointment in the NBA so far. 15-18 through 33 games, four-game losing streak. And yes, I understand they've had injuries. You know, all of their big guys have kind of missed time, but they did last year too. That's what happens when you bring injury-prone players all onto the same team. They miss a lot of games. You see it in New Orleans. It's a great collection of talent, but a bunch of injury-prone players. And guess what? They're missing a lot of games. So, you know, it was never going to work, honestly, in Phoenix. Like, you have three really good guys that are making a combined $150 million, but the new tax, the new second apron, all that stuff, it's just not going to work for them. And you saw it. I mean, you would see all the memes when Brad was here in 21, 22, like, of him, you know, sitting on the sidelines with 40 points and the Wizards are about to lose their fifth straight game by 20-plus points. And Bradley Beal's got his face in his palms, and he just looks like he's, you know, detached from the rest of the team. Like, I'm too good to be here. I don't want to be here. That's what you've seen. There's been pictures taken of him in Phoenix. Go look, of him just outside the huddles, not engaged. And I don't want to speculate because I'm not there, but Suns fans are out. From all the comments that I've gotten and, you know, all the comments I've seen on some of the Suns pages I follow, it seems pretty clear that they want to move on from Brad. And it's tough for them because they're in a tough spot. Realistically, they really can't do much. They're handicapped. They don't have really any second round picks. Washington pretty much owns them all. First round picks they gave up for KD, so they really don't have much. But the reason I mention this is because Jimmy Butler is obviously, if you didn't see, asked out for a trade. Really bad situation there in Miami. His top spot is Phoenix. Phoenix really wants him, apparently. It's reported that Matt Ishiba, the Suns owner, said he'd give Jimmy a lucrative contract extension if he were to get dealt to Phoenix. And the funny thing is, the one holdup is that the Suns to do it would have to include Bradley Beal to Miami, and Bradley Beal apparently wouldn't want to do that. He still has his no trade clause is still intact, even though he used it. He can use it as many times as he wants. It's still in that contract. It's still a clause. And apparently not only does Brad not want to go there, but the Heat don't want him. I mean, who wants a guy like that? 50 plus million for the next 3 years, who, if you look at it, and this guy, Evan Sider, I don't like him. I think he's an aggregator. I don't think anyone really respects him. But he had a good stat. And honestly, he probably didn't find this. Someone else did. He just didn't give them credit. So I really don't want to give him credit. But what he tweeted is that with Bradley Beal on the court, the Phoenix Suns are the 28th worst team in terms of net rating with Beal on, a negative 9.3. And then with Bradley Beal off the court, they're a plus 3.3, which is ninth. The top 10 team versus a bottom three team. That's the difference from the Bradley Beal that you traded all that assets for to Washington. You know, they're so much better with him not playing. And so that's just the funny thing. I want to start the show off with that because I think that's hilarious. Objectively speaking, from a Washington's perspective, you can kind of laugh at it because you're not the ones being laughed at. You're laughing with the whole league at Phoenix because they made a terrible trade. And what's good about this is, and why I mentioned this, obviously everything discussed on the show is Wizards-centric. It's the Wizards podcast, for crying out loud. But why it's important to the Wizards that the Suns are so bad is that they basically own the Suns' second-round picks for the next 6 years. They own Phoenix's second-round picks this year, so 2025, 2026, 27, 28, and 30. So that's 5 of the next 6 years Washington owns Phoenix second-round picks without any protections. And then they also hold the rights to swap first-round picks with Phoenix in 2026, 2028, and 2030. They had last year's, but obviously you have the second pick. You're not going to swap that with anybody. And so, not this season, but the following year, the year, 2 years, and then 4 years after that, Washington owns those pick swaps. And why that's important is because hopefully in the Wizards' perspective, when they're starting to contend in 26, 27, and beyond, the Suns, after, offloading all their assets to go all in, even though it didn't work out, they still really have nowhere to go. I mean, I can't tell you how much longer KD is going to be at this, playing at this level. Devin Booker might want to get traded. Bradley Beal's already, out the door. If they don't make a move for Butler, they're kind of stuck. And so if those second-round picks realistically turn into, basically late firsts in the 30 to 36, 37 range, and then you got those pick swaps when, maybe the Suns are trying to, rebuild, and, Washington is in the playoffs contending and also has a top pick in the draft. It's what the Thunder are doing now. It's kind of what the Celtics did when they beat the Wizards to move to the conference finals in 17 and won the first overall pick the following day. It's a really good situation, and it shows the proactive thinking. Michael Winger and Will Dawkins could have never really predicted that Phoenix would be this bad. I don't think anyone did. But they were proactive in moving Bradley Beal right when they got there. They didn't hesitate. They took what they could, and it's really coming back to help them because this is what could accelerate the rebuild. I should have an article coming out on Bullets Forever, maybe tomorrow or the day after, depending on how Phoenix continues to do. But, Phoenix's demise could drastically accelerate Washington's rebuild in terms of all these second-round picks being high, basically late first-round picks. Those pick swaps could come in handy. You could trade some of those second-round picks that you have. It's all coming back to realistically just look at Washington did it the right way. Bradley Beal was never going to work here. Ted Leonsis, to his credit, realized that a little late, but he realized that, something that Tommy Shepard never did. And Will Dawkins and Michael Winger have kind of come in here and righted the ship. So it's nice to see the parallel between, how bad Phoenix is and what could be of that situation if they decide to blow it up, and kind of what Washington is now, where they're tanking, they're the worst team in the league, their young guys and rookies are playing well, and they still own draft capital from teams like that. They still have 2 second-round picks from the Detroit Pistons from the Bagley trade. If you remember, they traded 2 vets in Gallinari and Muscala and got back 2 second-round picks and Marvin Bagley. Like, they got paid in pretty much probably early to mid second-round picks to trade away 2 guys they didn't want on expiring deals and take on Bagley, who's been okay in his minutes here. Nothing's going to come of it, but it shows how proactive and how smart this front office has been. Really cool to see that. Continue. Obviously, I'm sure Wizards fans are rooting for the young guys to play well, but they want losses. And that's, fair, rightfully so. But you also want to root against Phoenix because you have a vetting interest in that. You own the Pistons second round pick this season, so you're rooting against them. You want that to be high. If you look at it right now, I believe if the season ended today, let's say the Wizards get the first overall pick for fun. We all know that's not going to happen. They would get the first pick, get their choice at Flagg or Harper or Bailey, whoever they like. And then they don't own their own second round pick. It's from the Tommy Shepard days. Just terrible, terrible trading second round pick so far in the future because he was trying to save his job. So what could be basically a late first round pick from Washington is dealt to Boston somehow, some way. And then you look at Washington would have 39 right now, 39th pick via Phoenix and the 42nd pick via Detroit. And also the 49th pick from, I believe, the Chris Paul trade. I think that's the first one they get in that trade that would be 49. So they'd have basically four picks inside the top 50, three picks in the second round, including, you know, probably a top five pick for sure. So that's kind of an outlook on the Wizards, what to root for with the draft. But really nice to see how bad, realistically, like Phoenix has been their record this year. And it gets a little easier. I mean, they got a couple games against Charlotte, Philly, Atlanta, Utah. You know, their next couple games, they're probably going to go on a run. I mean, Washington, Detroit, they should go on a run. But nonetheless, they really probably won't make much of this. And if they blow it up, you know, look out because the Wizards are coming. They're coming. And eventually, if they're there with these, you know, high picks, that'll be, you know, a really good start to when they, you know, the contention phase, I should say, of this rebuild. So that's the Phoenix Suns and Bradley Beal and that whole debacle. I want to move on to some Wizards actual centric talk, and that's Alex Saar, who, I mean, let me tell you right now, he has been so unbelievably good these last couple of weeks. You know, coming off a month of December where he was crowned, you know, Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, and rightfully so. I mean, you really couldn't argue anybody other than Alex Saar in the Eastern Conference. This is his averages for December. Basically 14 points per game, 6.5 rebounds per game, 1.7 blocks per game, which, by the way, is top five in the league. Not just rookies, top five in the league. And then the most impressive stat of them all, 45.5% from three. I'm going to read that again. You're not hearing it the wrong way. No audio issues on your end. This is a 19-year-old center, a 7-foot center at that, who shot 45.5% from three in the month of December. And on a high volume, he shot 50 threes. That's a high volume of three-pointers in the month of December. And what's the best about it is you look at that now and you're like, yeah, you know, has he always been a great shooter? You know, maybe this season's just been really good. Like, if you looked at his summer league, he shot 11% from three. Maybe he made one in all of summer league. You had people calling him Kwame Brown, people calling him a bust. Why would you take him over Reed Shepard? Reed Shepard's the next Steph Curry. All that buzz just for Alex Saar to turn around after 11% from three in summer league, 24% in October, 24.6% in November, up to 46% from three from your 7-foot 19-year-old rookie center. That's unheard of. On a great clip as well, high volume of shots. So it's seeing this progression. It's seeing that, look, Alex Saar doesn't get phased. And Brian Keefe said that. He said a couple weeks ago, the best thing about Alex is, you know, he's willing to put in the work, but he's never phased. If you had a bad game, if you had a bad play, he just goes back in and rectifies it and makes up for it and puts in the work. And that's what you want to see is this growth, this development. Because you don't come into the season expecting, you know, these rookies to be all-stars or to turn it around right away. But you want to slowly and gradually see that incline in production, efficiency, and all of that. And the wins will come. And that's what you're seeing with Alex Saar, that you're seeing with the Wizards. And so that was really cool to see him get rewarded. You had a couple guys. I mean, Jordan Poole, I think it was Keyshawn George and Bub, I believe. Yeah, all posted on social media. And I understand that's more of like a Gen Z thing, and social media doesn't matter. But to have the support of your teammates, to kind of, you know, see everyone come together to support Alex is cool. I think Jordan Poole said he was the big Eiffel. That's his nickname. It's pretty cool. I think a lot of people liked it. But that was nice to see him get rewarded. Eve Missy from the Pelicans was the Western Conference. He's been phenomenal as well. I think the Kia NBA rookie ladder right now is number one, Missy, and number two, Alex Saar. And honestly, after this matchup, two-game matchup between them, it seems like, you know, Alex Saar really cemented himself as I'm here and I should win this Rookie of the Year. And it wasn't because Misi played bad at all. I thought he was phenomenal. He's so much more impressive than what meets the eye. You just got to watch him play. Freak athlete, very active on the glass, efficient score. He was 9-12 in the last two games. But this is what my guy Bijan Todd, and please follow Bijan if you haven't. He's a great follow on Twitter, really does good work. Great guy as well. He tweeted out, here's how the Rookie of the Year candidates Sarr and Misi stacked up in their two meetings this season. Sarr, 13 of 22, 37 points, 18 rebounds, 8 assists in 55 minutes. Misi, 9 of 12 from the field, 28 points, 18 rebounds, 4 assists in 64 minutes. I mean, like, yeah, kind of even, but Sarr taking a higher volume of shots, scored more points, played 10 less minutes, basically. I think he didn't dominate this matchup by any means. I thought it was pretty even. But I did think he won it. And look, in a season where, you know, you could win Rookie of the Year or not win Rookie of the Year, it's not going to change the trajectory of this rebuild. It would be cool to see Alex Sarr, after all of the bust labels and all that, after a really bad summer league, you know, come out and kind of shut everyone down, be a nice confidence boost, to kind of look, say like, look, you know, you tried to write me off after four games of summer league play. And I just won Rookie of the Year, so what are you going to say now? So I think that would be cool. I think right now, after these two games, it's probably tied. I don't think Sarr is Rookie of the Year yet, but I do think he's making a strong case, and I think if he continues to play this way, he's going to play his way into, you know, a really cool award. So that was awesome to see. Really cool matchup. Like I said at the top of the show, you know, Washington lost the games, but they won the battle. You hear that saying a lot, lost the game, won the battle, but they did. I mean, when it comes to May, when it comes to mid-May, you're at the draft lottery, and the Wizards can't fall outside the top five because they're the worst team after having, you know, lost both games to the Pelicans. You know, Wizards fans, the Wizards front office, I'm sure they're going to sit back and say, you know what, it was better that we lost those games. And that's kind of where it is now. You have, your young guys balling out, and you're still losing games. That's probably the best case scenario for Washington. Another thing I wanted to highlight, you know, Kyle Kuzma, in his return, he came off the bench a couple games ago, 9 points, didn't do much against Chicago, I believe. But then he comes out with a solid showing against New Orleans on the road. He didn't take a single three, I think, which is phenomenal. Josh Robbins tweeted out his shot chart. And that's what was eye-opening to me, because my guy Matt Modano mentioned this as well on his show the other day, but Kuz, he's like the way Kuz has played, and I have too, because he's not settling for threes. He's playing the way he'd probably play if he was a third, fourth option on another contending team. And maybe that's by design. The Wizards are trying to, you know, showcase what he could do for your team instead of what Kyle Kuzma can do as a number one option, because I think we all know what he can do as a number one option. It's not that pretty. But when he's a three or four option, he's one of the most coveted players, 3-and-D guys in the league. And so that's what you saw. Against New Orleans in Washington, he had a season high 28 points, 5 boards, efficient 13 of 23 from the field, took 5 threes, made 2 of them. That's 40% clip. So he was great, over 50% from the field, his best game of the season by far. But what's crazy is, like, last year, even the year before, like, this was commonplace, him dropping near 30 a game, efficiently at that, playing really well. It's nice to see him get back to that for Kuz himself, but I'm sure for the Wizards and the trade value as well, because if the reporting is true and Kuz would accept a deal anywhere else, I want to be clear. I messed this up last week and I apologize for that, but he never asked out. I messed up the wording. Basically, he would accept the deal rather than decline it like he did last year. And the Wizards are pretty adamant in wanting to try to move him to a contender. So if all the cards fall the correct way, and Kuz keeps building that value like he has these last two games, I think you'll see him in a New Jersey come February. Who will that be? I don't know. What will the package look like? I have no idea. I would say at least a first round pick. No way you get two. The ship is kind of sailed on that. But at the end of the day, I think it was nice to see Kyle Kuzma after, you know, missing a while with a rib injury, you know, having to, you know, rehab with that, get his stamina back up, his strength back up. It seems like he's kind of figured that out with a season high 28. So that was cool. Cool to see. Wizards lost as well. So again, like I said, lost the battle, won the war in the long haul. They dropped to the worst team. They're 6-27 now. Playing better as of late, but, you know, didn't match up, I guess, well with the Pels. CJ dropped 50. That's another thing. Funny stat. There's been 8. I tweeted this out the other day. There's been 8 50-point games in the NBA this season. and four have come against the Washington Wizards. I mean, the Wizards defense has been bad all season, especially in individual matchups, and not having Bilal to check CJ. He's missed both Pelicans games with an illness, left the Chicago game early with an illness, just didn't look right running up and down the floor. A non-COVID illness, that's what they specified it as. But not having him has been adamant these last two games against New Orleans whenever he hasn't played, especially against CJ, because he went off for 50 and the Wizards had no one to stop him. So that's the tank bowl. Wizards are now 6-27. I thought Sar had a really good game against Missy in the rookie of the year battle. Here's an updated look at the tank standings in the league. This is an ongoing segment here on the Wizards podcast, and it will be until the Wizards no longer are tanking. And I don't know when that will be. This will probably be a 2 to 3 year segment. But nonetheless, here's where we stand. The Wizards have reclaimed the top spot. I'm sure a lot of people are really happy now. They are the worst team in the league once more. About a 1 week hiatus, but they're right back to having the throne. They're 6-27. They are followed by the 7-29 Pelicans. And I honestly don't know what the tiebreaker is between teams in the lottery. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm 99% sure it's a coin flip. So just because the Pelicans won the season series doesn't mean that they're automatically beneath the Wizards in the order. I'm pretty sure, let's say they both have 15 wins at the end of the year, it would just be a coin flip to see who has the worst record technically in the lottery standings. So they're 7-29. Charlotte is actually doing a really good job of tanking. They've lost 10 in a row. They're 7-27 on the year after a decent start. Toronto rounds it out at 8-27. And then the streak in Utah Jazz, man, two straight wins, 9-25 on the season. They're kind of separating themselves from the Wizards. The way I see it, once a team hits 15 wins, I do not think there's any way, even if they lost the rest of the way, that Washington would catch them. And honestly, for most of these teams, they're not going to lose the rest of the way. Teams like Portland, who just picked up a nice win against the Bucks, 12 wins. I do not see them as a threat to Washington whatsoever. Brooklyn, 13 wins, also beat Milwaukee. Philadelphia, they're getting cold. They have 14 wins. They're not going to be anywhere close. Then you got Phoenix with 15 wins, Sacramento and Chicago with 16. Again, these are all teams that I just named, Philadelphia, Phoenix, and on. They're contending. They want to be competitive. They're not going to be a threat. So honestly, that leaves, those bottom five teams. And with Utah playing as well as they're currently playing, they should be able to separate themselves. Toronto's terrible, man. They are so bad. I don't know what their direction is at all, but Quickley's back. Barnes is back. Maybe they'll start to win some games because the roster isn't that bad. The real concerns for the Wizards are the Hornets and the Pelicans because they're both terrible and they're injured, so you never know what will come of that. But look, the Wizards are the worst team in the league. They really don't have much momentum on their side after a decent stretch of games. They've kind of fallen a little bit, especially against New Orleans. So that's the tank standings, the cellar dweller, as you would say. That's what my guy Marco for Bolts Forever says. But that's the tank standings. A look ahead for Washington in terms of what's next. I like doing this because I mentioned, if you remember, if you're an avid listener and you listened to one of the previous episodes, I highlighted Chicago, two games against Charlotte, two games against the Pelicans. This is a stretch where Washington can kind of start to put some wins together. Swept Charlotte, beat Chicago, dropped both to the Pelicans, but they have started to win some of these winnable games. And for a Washington team that had been losing a lot, you're trying to lose, but it's always nice to pick up a couple wins here and there, and they had done that, so that was cool. But a look ahead, Tuesday, Washington is at home against against Houston. They're then at Philadelphia. I'll actually be at that game. I'm very excited for it. They're at Chicago, and then they're home for three against Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Phoenix. I'm going to go through it right now and tell you what they're going to do in these games. Houston, they're going to get blown out. At Philadelphia, they're probably going to get blown out. At Chicago, could be close. They lost by 29 to the Bulls and then killed them the other time at home, so you never know. Then you're home against Oklahoma City. They might lose by a million. Home against Minnesota, not playing the best basketball, but they'll kill Washington. Home against Phoenix, Brad returns. Nobody cares this time. I think this was actually supposed to be a TNT game for the Wizards, but again, the NBA just like the Suns suck and nobody cares about the Wizards Beal narrative anymore. It's past, so we're just not going to have it on TNT, which valid. And so that's no longer national televised, but Washington will probably lose that too. So I think you could see, you know, another losing streak start to build. And it doesn't get easy after that because they go out west for a six-game trip. You know, at Golden State, Sacramento, Los Angeles, Utah, Phoenix, Dallas. It's about to get rough. About to get rough for Washington. I don't know if another. Well, they won on the 1st of January, so it won't be another winless month. But nonetheless, you know, Washington has put himself in a nice position, realistically, to you know, maybe steal a couple wins here and there and really not hurt themselves too bad. I saw a couple people comment, why does it matter that the Wizards lost both games to the Pelicans? Why does it matter that they're now the worst team if all three of the bottom teams still get a 14% chance at the top pick? They still get the exact same chance to get 2 and 3. The real kicker is their percent chance to get 6 and beyond, because it's non-existent if you're the worst team. The farthest you can fall if you're the worst team is 5, and then it goes so on. So if you're the second worst team, it's 6. Third worst, I'm pretty sure it's 7, and so on and so forth. So again, you're just kind of, you know, building a little bit of cushion for yourselves to where you might fall, but you really won't fall too far. And in a draft that's this deep, if you solidify at least a top 5 selection, you're going to come away with a pretty good player. Now, I think the top 3, if you're watching any college basketball, has separated itself from the rest. But it doesn't mean that the rest isn't good, because I think a lot of the rest would be 1 or 2 or 3 last year in what people considered a pretty weak draft class. So that's the outlook with the Wizards. That's a tank standings for the Wizards. That's the next 6 games for Washington. I expect a lot of losses in that. Something I did also want to touch on is the play of Bob Carrington, because I think with how good Alex Saar has been, Bub's performances have kind of gone under the radar. And while it hasn't really been back-to-back-to-back games, you know, it's kind of 17 here, 14 there, his mid-range shot is lethal. He's got a nice little pull-up. It's smooth. He's confident taking it. Nothing but net. He hit a pair at New Orleans back-to-back. It didn't touch the rim at all. Nothing but nylon. You know, he's been really good from the mid-range. He had a clutch shot against the Knicks from the mid-range, too. He had a really solid outing, 16 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, you know, really good. And he's efficient in his shooting as well. I think he was 4 of 7 from 3, 6 of 9 from the floor. You're starting to see Bob get more comfortable. He's starting pretty much every game. It's cool to see. And obviously, you know, I could talk about Jordan Poole, his counterpart in that backcourt, for a while now. I feel like I talk so much about Jordan Poole all the time, but like, nah, whatever, we're going to talk about him. He's been terrific. The first returns for All-Star came out. He's 8th amongst Eastern Conference guards. I don't know how many people get taken per conference. I think I saw it was like 12 maybe per conference. So I don't know if it's 6 guards and 6 front court, or if it's just the 6th highest vote getters, whether you're a guard or a front court. I have no idea. But I know for a fact that if Jordan Poole were to be 8, he would not get in. And he's a pretty sizable ADK behind Maxey, who's in 7. So it's cool to see, number one, Jordan Poole getting national recognition, because he has been superb. I mean, 22 points per game on 42% from the three-point line is phenomenal, especially considering how much he struggled last year. But nonetheless, the record, you know, I mean, Bradley Beal averaged 30 a game and wasn't an All-Star, and that's because the Wizards were terrible. And they weren't even the worst team in the league then. They were probably like the 7th or 8th worst team in the league, but nonetheless, like he didn't make it. And number one, that was crazy. But number two, could you really blame anybody for saying, look, he's just a stat sheet stuffer? I don't think that's the case for Jordan Poole. I think Jordan Poole has been great. He's affected winning. You know, from what I've seen, he's been so good this year. It'd be cool to see him get in. But again, I understand the people who say, I don't want him to get in because he doesn't play for a winning team. He's that, I get it. I don't think that's the case, but it's tough to make it to an All-Star game when you're on the Wizards, nonetheless, because it is popular voting a lot of the time. But it's also equally as tough when you're on a team like the Wizards that's terrible. And I think that's what you're going to see with Jordan Poole. But cool to see the national recognition start to flow in. He was tremendous against Chicago, 30 points, 6 of 13 from the three-point line, plus 8, a team-high plus 8. That's 5 straight games with 25-plus points and 5-plus threes made. And it would be 6 if he didn't get hurt against the Pelicans. Took a hard fall, injured that hip, I believe. It was a left hip contusion again. Has had a couple issues with that, missed a couple games with that. But nonetheless, he's been so good. Easily the Wizards' best player by a mile this season. Big factor in a lot of their success, albeit a limited success. But he's been absolutely tremendous this year. So that's Poole. Trying to find what else is really noteworthy. I saw a couple people ask me about Sadiq Bey and whether he might return. I said this at the beginning of the year, and I'm standing by it. Based on the 9 to 12 month recovery, I guess, for ACL tears, that would put him back somewhere between January/February ish if they decide to bring him back. I could very well see a situation, a scenario where he doesn't play this year. ACLs are tricky, always a little rust to shake off. And if they're being really cautious, they want him to be here. It's a 3-year deal, I believe. So he's got time, and the Wizards are trying to tank. Sadiq Bey playing, he's good, so I don't know if that's anti-tank for him to play. But again, the Wizards haven't really released any updates. It's not like he's been practicing or anything like that. So for all I know, I'm just going to operate as in he could return whenever at this point, because that 9 months, I believe, has passed. But he could also very well not play the rest of the season. Bagley had that really gross-looking knee sprain a couple weeks ago. He hasn't played. They didn't really give a timeline, I don't think, for him, but he's a knee sprain. So I don't know how significant, but he's still out. I would assume Bilal returns eventually after he beats this illness. Jordan Poole, I would assume, returns next game as well. I don't know how about the hip contusion is, but he came back and played and drilled a three before leaving again against the Pelicans. So that's the Wizards with injuries. They had a couple, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, they were all injured. And they've kind of gotten a little bit more healthy as of late. Bagley and Bay have really been the only staples on the injury report the last couple weeks. But, nonetheless, getting better. Another thing to note, I feel like I'm kind of going all over the place here, but Tristan Vucevic had a really solid showing in the go-go win. They just beat the Charge twice. They have back-to-back wins. Shout out to Cody Toppert. He's doing a hell of a job there with the Wizards G League affiliate. But Vucevic in the go-go's win on Saturday, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, plus 19, which is, I think, a game high, and was 4 or 5 from the 3-point line, which is really good. He's been injured. I don't know what he had, but I hadn't played much for the go-go, really barely played for the Wizards. Still being on that two-way deal. But, a solid showing for him, efficient from three. The plus 19 is great because I've been getting on him because I don't think he's a great defender and he hasn't affected winning when he's been playing, anywhere. But a plus 19 shows that the team's doing well with him on the court. It's always nice to see. I'm pretty sure he barely played today. I think he injured his ankle, but he exited the game. So we don't know how serious that is. Shout out to Varun Shankar for the post. He tweeted about that today. But that's Vucevic. I know a lot of people have been asking me, Greg, where is he? Where's Tristan? Is he going to play? There he is in the G League playing pretty well. Hopefully the injury isn't too concerning. And he's a guy that I think if you do trade Valanciunas, which I do expect to happen, he's a guy that would step up and maybe see some minutes, especially if Bagley's still out. You don't necessarily know if you want to go the Holmes route. You'll start to see maybe more of Vucevic like you did last year towards the end of the season. Speaking of trades, you've had a lot of buzz going around. Brogdon, Valanciunas, Kuzma, I think is the big three for Washington. And the Wizards are a team that's definitely shopping. They're looking around. And what's funny to me is, like, I know a lot of people are like, how active they're going to be at the trade deadline in February. A lot of the guys that were, not eligible to be traded are now eligible to be traded, I think, on January 15th. Washington might move earlier than expected. You've seen actually a lot of big trades like Dorian Finney-Smith and all that. They've started to happen a little earlier. Teams aren't necessarily waiting anymore until the deadline because they kind of need the help now, they've realized. And so, you could see a random Shams tweet sometime in, late January, very early February, even before the deadline, one of the Wizards pieces has been dealt. Again, I do think my prediction right now is the line would be set at 1.5 between those three. Brogdon is the one that I don't know because he's been very injured, but when he's played, he's been solid. I don't know if a team wants to give up multiple seconds. Maybe if the Wizards can get one, anything you can get for Brogdon at this rate, because he was kind of a filler in the Denny trade. You got Bub back. You got two first back. I think whatever you can get for Brogdon is a plus at this point. Valanciunas has been very solid. I think you can get something for him. A first is ideal. I talked to Matt about this the other day on his pod. I think you can't get a first. I don't see the market shaping up. It's a pretty deep center class. I think JV is the best center available, but I don't necessarily think a team is going to part with a one for him. So I think 2 to 3 seconds for JV is probably the realistic return, maybe 1 to 2 for Brogdon. I think one first-round pick and maybe some salary, expiring deal, maybe a bloated salary that Washington takes back from a contender, that could be enough to entice a team to move the needle and get Kyle Kuzma and his services. But again, the trade market, I think you saw from Tyus Jones and Landry Shamet last season, the inability of Washington to trade those guys that you really thought should be traded and would be traded, when that didn't materialize, you know, Wizards fans, I think it was a reality check and one that they probably needed, because even, you know, myself included, I was certain that Tyus Jones would get dealt. He had a, you know, decently sized market, I felt. But I think the Wizards overvalued him and they overplayed their cards. They thought someone wouldn't call their bluff, but every team seemingly did. And he walked for free, you got nothing. Shamet walked for free, you got nothing. And so when that was the case last year, I think expectations have kind of been tempered from the Wizards' perspective. And now you're kind of sitting there like, look, if that's the case and they really get a couple seconds, that's better than nothing, better than what you got for Tyus and Shamet, which was nothing at the last season's deadline. And you kind of move on to where I think the Wizards fans are just, they want Kyle Kuzma, you know, they want to move on from him. I wouldn't say they're fed up with the performance, because Kuzma's always kind of been hot and cold in DC. I think the main thing is, you know, Kyle Kuzma isn't a number one option. I think it's been unfair for the Wizards to use him as a number one option. And you saw these last couple games when he's not a number one option. He's not the top ball handler or shot creator or shot taker even. He's very solid in his role. But when people aren't, you know, going in on Tommy Shepard or Bradley Beal for the reason the Wizards aren't winning, someone's got to take the blame. And that's where I think, you know, fans are just like, you know, it's time to move on, both from Kuz's perspective, I'm sure, as well as the Wizards. And I think that's why the reporting has been he would accept the trade this time rather than deny it. Because what's funny is last year, it's been this whole thing ever since the Wizards rebuild. Like, Kuz wants to stay in DC. You know, he wants to make it work with the Wizards. He wants to lead them through this rebuild. He wants to be that guy. And I always thought that was bullshit. I always maintained that. I think even probably Kuz and everyone saw the writing on the wall. Like, it's really unlikely that this team gets to where they are if they are really contending. And at that point, you are still the best player on this team, number one. And number two, they're still paying you like the best player on this team. And number three, at that time, you'll probably be 31 or 32. Are you really still going to be in the prime of your career? It didn't make sense ever. I think everyone knew it. And it was just kind of like, you got to say what you got to say at the time. But it seems like the writing's on the wall for Kyle Kuzma to move on. For the Wizards, you know, seemingly want to move on from Kyle Kuzma. It's just a matter of, does the market materialize? And if it doesn't, do the Wizards sit there and say, we're not going to take less than what we think he's worth? We're going to stay on that. He's still got two more years of a really good contract. It's descending value, keep in mind. So he's only making $21 million next year and $19 million the following. Unbelievably team-friendly contract. But he's almost 30 years old. He's not necessarily in that prime stage, you know, for too much longer. And so I think maybe moving on as quick as possible, getting what you can, not only do you get decent return and the best return you might get, but you open up a lot of shots, a lot of minutes. And I think, you know, a bigger role for some of the younger guys. And that's been the main thing that Wizards fans want, is for, you know, whatever 14, 15 shots plus a game Kuzma's taking to be distributed to some of the younger guys on the team that they're really looking to keep for the long haul if they're not going to maintain keeping Kuzma for the long haul. I think that's the kind of consensus thought process for most Wizards fans. And I think it's kind of mutual between Kuz and the Wizards to move on there based on the reporting from Mark Stein and others. So we'll have to see based on the deadline. I think, let me actually look that up. I don't know when the NBA trade deadline is this season. I think it'd be good for me to know. What is the trade deadline in the NBA? February 6th this year. So February 6th, 2025, very early February. So by the time this is released on the 6th of January, a literal month, it's actually working out well. a month from when this was released, you will have a the trade deadline. And you'll see, I think, Brogdon, Valanciunas, Kuzma, like I said, if anyone else gets traded from Washington, I'd be pretty shocked. I mean, Bagley, if he wasn't hurt, I could see maybe a team jumping and biting. Holmes, sure, but he doesn't play, so I don't know really what he showcased, unless the team really likes his film from last season or what he's done garbage time this year. But realistically, apart from those three, I don't know if you trade anyone. Corey Kispert, this was also talked about on Matt's pod. I couldn't see him getting dealt, number one. I don't think he's had the season he hoped to. He's had times where he's been great, times where he's been pretty bad, but I don't think he's done enough to where a team would be willing to trade whatever the Wizards want for him to kind of be a specialist, you know, an offensive player, great shooter, but a little bit inconsistent at times and not the best defender, realistically. Let's call spade a spade, not a good defender at all. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. So I don't really see a team coughing up a one for him, and I think that's really the only way the Wizards would trade him, especially, you know, he's locked down for the future. You extended him this past October. I don't think that makes sense for either party. So he'd be surprising to get dealt. I don't see anyone else getting dealt. Kuz, JV, Brogdon, the line set at 1.5. You guys let me know in the DMs or comments of this post if you think it's over or under 1.5. I'd lean over. I think one of JV and Brogdon gets dealt. I'm not sure what kind of success you would get moving both. I think it's going to be seconds for either player. And then Kyle Kuzma, I think, does get moved eventually. And I think it is at this deadline. So I would go over. I think it's two of those three. But I am famous for last year. I think I set the line at 3.5, and I took the over, and they traded Daniel Gafford. That was it. So realistically, you'll have to see what they decide to do at the deadline, which is going to be a month from the time I release this. But a lot's going to be moving on, a lot of moving pieces in D.C., but the main takeaways I have, you know, as I wrap this episode, Alex Saar, rookie of the month for the Eastern Conference. He's been phenomenal, really building his case, coming off 18-11 against New Orleans in Washington. Bub Carrington coming off 16-7-4 against New Orleans in Washington. Keyshawn George, shooting struggles are real. 0-5 against the Pels. Had a good game against Chicago. But these two New Orleans games have struggled, kind of reverted back to what he was doing the last couple of weeks, which isn't great. He's still young, 20 years old. He showed flashes. The defense has still been there. I want to make that clear. George is still one of probably the top three on-ball defenders on this team already. And the shot will come along eventually. I'm not concerned. What I do like is the defense. And so I'm not concerned with George. But the rookies have been great. Jordan Poole has been phenomenal. Kyle Kuzma's starting to figure it out. The Wizards have been starting to figure it out. But they lost the two games that mattered in the Tank Bowl. They're back to being the worst team in the league at 6-27, and they're coming up on a pretty tough stretch, including a West Coast road trip at some point in mid to late January. So, you know, it could get a lot worse record-wise for the Wizards, but a lot better tank-wise and lottery-wise for Washington. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys all for tuning in. A little bit longer of an episode. I've been trying to get them out a little longer. We're back to the one-a-week schedule, which is cool for me. I like to be consistent with it. So I hope you guys are enjoying the episodes. But that's going to do it. If you got any thoughts about what I said or about anything Wizards, my DMs are always open. I always respond. So feel free to let me know your thoughts there. But again, appreciate all you guys for listening. It's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.